Hello, and welcome to the Off Kilter Quilt. My name is Frances, and I'll be your hostess.
Hello, and welcome to episode 189, which I'm calling Sellers and Sharers. Except sharers is hard to say. Maybe I should call it selling and sharing. I talk in the First Quilt Diary about trying to be more active on Instagram and following a lot of quilty people. This is on my Off Kilter Quilt Instagram account. And trying to figure that all out. And over the last couple of weeks, as I've been doing that, kind of seeing that some people use Instagram to sort of sell their brand, which I think is fine. I think that that's a very legitimate use for Instagram. But other people use Instagram to share. They're sharers, which is, again, hard to say. And what they seem to be doing is creating community. And there are a few people who actually are able to do both, which is interesting to me. So selling and sharing. Yes, much better than sellers and sharers. It is Tuesday, May 3rd, which means I'm a day late with this. But I was hoping to get a block done for version 2 of the crib quilt I'm working on for Jack's Advisor. Version 1, the top is done. It's a wonky quilt that I decided not to give Lacey, partly because the colorway is not what I think she's after. Not that she even knows I'm making this, but you know, it's a quilt that turned out to be much redder than fuchsia. So maybe much redder than pinker, we'll say that. So I am now paper piecing version 2, but I'm because I'm doing a lot of chain piecing, I don't have a complete block, so that will be next episode. By next episode, I better well have the whole thing done, certainly the whole top, but getting close to the whole thing, because the baby shower is May 18th, which, you know, gives me 2 weeks. 2 weeks isn't really that long. I really need to get on this. I need to quit docking and get back to quilting. So May 3rd, a good day. My older brother's birthday. Very nice. I can't forget to call him tonight. And the only thing I can think that I need to tell you, and I don't need to tell you, but I will tell you, is that I talk a lot in this episode about books. Last week I was sick, and so I got a lot of reading done. And I mentioned a lot of the books that I read and finished. And over the weekend, I finished a new book called The Stopped Heart by Julie Meyerson. I talk about one of her nonfiction books, I think in the second quilt diary. And this is a novel that just came out. It's published by Harper One. She's British. It's out in the U.S. in paperback. And it's a ghost story. And it's I thought it was good. It was creepy. And I started it Saturday and actually had a little bit of trouble sleeping Saturday night. There's enough creepy stuff. Like, I had a bad dream. Not horrifying bad dream, but some troubling images. So it's not a book, if you have small children, you shouldn't read it. Don't read it, okay? In the way that Cormac McCarthy's The Road came out when Will was a baby, I was just like, nah, not doing The Road right now. In fact, I never go back around to it. Maybe I'll read that next, now that apparently I can slightly stomach when terrible things happen to small children, slightly. I'm still not that great at it. What else did I want to tell you? Oh, new podcast I've been listening to. It's not crafty, but it is, and it's just new to me, Nerdette. I don't know if you are aware of this one. I discovered it by looking for podcasts about Game of Thrones, which I have watched sort of halfway through squinted eyes. The Nerdettes, along with Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, have a recap podcast that they started doing last year. And they're doing one for season 6. And the Nerdettes, this is sort of I don't know what you would call it, sort of a side project. But their regular podcast is called Nerdettes, and it's quite wonderful. These are two, they sound young to me, women, but you know, maybe in their late 20s, early 30s. They're in Chicago, and they're nerds, and they're interested in tons of stuff. They interviewed a lot of writers. I've been sort of catching up and cherry-picking, and I listened to a wonderful episode. I think actually might have been their most recent episode, I should say. I've gone back in time, but this is their most recent. And they interview Anna Quinlan, who wrote Miller's Valley, which I recently read, finished, and liked very much. And then Stephen King. But all they talk to Stephen King about is his corgis. Huge corgi lover. Anyway, they're delightful. So if you're looking for something new to listen to, and I'm getting caught up with I want to say Hobbies Up to Here.
That's just a great mother-daughter podcast. There are a number of mother-daughter podcasts, some of which, one of which I discuss in this episode. But when I listen to Hobbies Up to Here, I hope I'm saying that right. Hobbies Up to Here. It's not Hobbies Out to Here. Up to Here. They're just wonderful. I can just listen to them talk just to maybe about anything for long periods of time. So check that out if you haven't. All right, then. I want to get on then with the Quilt Diaries. And yeah, did I mention? Yes, I mentioned that last week I was sick. So, and I got a number of really wonderful emails, and I'm getting caught up with emails right now. So if you have not heard back from me, you will soon, I promise. All right, then, on with the Quilt Diaries. Quilt Diary Day 1. It's Sunday, April 24th, 2016. I am standing in front of my design board in which I have the crib quilt up, but I don't think this is going to be the crib quilt. If you're a quilter, you may have joined me this morning to discuss how this quilt should be made. Right now in front of me, it is all the blocks. So these are 6-inch string blocks. Yes, they are string blocks, as many of you very gently pointed out to me after the last episode, where I'm like, this is some kind of common design, but what is it? It's like, well, of course it's a string block. Yes. Anyway, they're 6-inch string blocks, and I've been trying to figure out, should I put sashing between the blocks? That was my original idea, the Denise Schmidt quilt that this is ultimately a version of. Well, not, it's not the Denise Schmidt quilt that inspired me to do a string quilt. And I posted a picture of that quilt in the last episode's show notes. It has sashing. But I've, you know, gone back and forth about sashing. And the thing is, when you push all the blocks together and don't have sashing, it's very wonky. Now, Daisy, Lazy Daisy, likes the wonky look. And several other people do, too. Now, I posted two pictures, the wonky picture and then one with space between the blocks. And people were seeing the wonky picture first and going, I like wonky. And then they'd see the ready for sashing picture after that and go, oh, I like this too. So, and then the comedians in the group were like, why don't you add some yellow? Because they know how I feel about yellow. Here's what I've decided. I'm going to do two quilts. I'm going to do this one wonky because I kind of, I kind of like the wonk, you know, let's follow the wonk. That's my new motto. But I don't think this is the right quilt for Lacey. Lacey is Jack's advisor. She is pregnant. We're having a baby shower for her next month. And her nursery colors are fuchsia, gray, coral, and light yellow. The yellow's out. We know that. But I think one of the reasons I'm having issues with this quilt, there are several reasons, but one, it's not strongly fuchsia or coral. It's much more pink and strawberry red. So there's that. There's gray. There's dark gray in it. So I think one, it's just like not the right palette. Secondly, what was my second reason for not? Oh, you know, because when you start a quilt, when you start cutting and sewing just based on whim, when you don't really know what you're doing, which I so rarely do, you kind of figure out halfway through that you're doing it wrong. Which I did. And I thought, well, there's nothing else to do, but, you know, there's no way out but through. So I just kept on going. But I realized it's like for the string quilt to work the way I wanted it to work, there needed to be more uniformity. And this quilt does not, these blocks are not, they're sort of lucky uniformity in places, but it's really not uniform. And on the one hand, I don't mind that it's not uniform, but you just don't know with other people. You don't know about the muggles. You don't know. I have my friend Kristen says she doesn't make quilts for other people very often because she doesn't think they'll appreciate them. And I'm sort of like, oh, I'd never thought about that. I just assumed. But, you know, you don't know about people. So you don't want to get too wonky on people. Although, you know, Lacey's a dancer and she's really cool and we like her a lot. That might not be the vision she has for her baby's nursery. So I'm going to go a little bit more uniform. So, yeah. Putting another quilt on my roster. So that, the Modern Birds in the Air and my Birds in the Air Civil War quilt that I am hand piecing. It's busy. Someone noted on the Twilters
like, you're making a lot of quilts right now. I'm like, I really am. It's a little scary, but fun. It's really fun. I'm not doing as much reading as I would like to do. I just finished, by the way, Anna Quinlan's book, Miller's Valley, which I really like. If you like Anna Quinlan, then read this. It's not a plot-heavy book. It's very character-driven, and that, by me, is just fine. If you're a plot person, I don't know how you'd feel about it. But if you like reading about families and the passing of time, et cetera, with strong women characters, strong women narrators, you might like this. I liked it very much. I read it pretty quickly. It's so nice to have a novel, you know, that you like. I don't always have that novel. But this one I did like a lot. And I knew I would because I always like what Anna Quinlan does. So what I've been pondering, so now I'm on Instagram, right? So I've been pondering social media stuff. I've been pondering the different ways we present ourselves on social media. And I started this Off-Kilter Quilt account on Instagram. And I was trying to figure out, it's like, you know, my friend Kristen, again, who knows a lot about marketing, gave me some really good tips about getting followers and about sort of Instagram etiquette and, you know, the various things that one does in order to be not just someone that gets followers, but who behaves themselves, I think, in a way that would attract followers. Let's put it that way. I just started this last week, and it's hard to know quite how to go about it, but except to look at a lot of pictures, look at a lot of people's Instagram feeds, and, you know, and just doing searches, quilts, modern quilts, that sort of thing. What I have decided is true on Instagram, at least in the quilty world, is you have people who are sellers and people who are sharers. And the people who are sellers are literally selling something, whether it's patterns, whether it's fabric, whether it's themselves, because they are teachers, they are industry figures, right? And those people often have many, many followers and only follow a few people. The sharers are people who just want to share pictures of what they're doing, and sometimes pictures of their families or flowers, you know, and are really, I think, seeking community, right? And then there are interesting crossovers, like our girl Krista Watson, who is just fabulous, and who, in fact, the very day that I created my Instagram account as Off-Kilter Quilt, she told her many, many, many followers that they should follow me. And I got a lot of followers. And I just thought that was lovely and generous and kind. And it seems to me who Krista is. And Krista is a rising star in the quilt industry. If you're not familiar with her, she has published 2 books on machine quilting. And the most recent one just came out a couple weeks ago. She did it with Angela Walters. She just won second place in the modern category at Paducah. She's teaching all over the place. She's going to be teaching at QuiltCon. But Krista seems to me like a sharer, even though she's selling, right? She's got books and she's got classes and all this stuff. But she seems to me to be someone who is seeking community, you know, and she's a twilter and is an active member and just feels like part of this community. And I love that about her. I think Annie Smith, that's, well, my best friend Annie Smith to you, is a sharer, even though she's a well-known person in the quilting industry. She is the queen of applique, you know, a sought-after teacher, et cetera, et cetera. But she seems to me to be trying to create community, to be seeking community. Is a lovely person, has family in this area where I live in Central North Carolina, and I think it's been 2 years, I think it was 2 summers ago, was in town and had listened to the podcast and knew that I went to Thimble Pleasures in Chapel Hill a lot and got in touch with them so that they could get in touch with me and say, do you want to meet Annie Smith? I'm like, of course I want to meet Annie Smith. And so that to me, someone who, and who's absolutely delightful, by the way. And again, someone who has things to sell, but is also a sharer, shares herself. And I think there are ways in which sellers, and I don't have anything in the world against people who are strictly sellers. They're using Instagram, I think, in a perfectly appropriate way, right? To, you know, they're using it to say, here's what I've got for sale. Now, oftentimes they're in some ways using, you know, creating a persona, right? You look at these pictures and they're fabulous and they just look like, oh, this is the life. They must be living the life. And nobody's living the life, right? That's if you're over 40 and you don't know that, I mean, please know that. I think most of us do know that, that nobody is living the life. Life is hard for everyone. You know, we've all got our deals, right? We've all got our burdens, and good stuff too as well, I hope. But any event, but the sellers are, you know, they're selling products, they're selling themselves, they're selling a dream. And I don't begrudge them, but I actually, for the most part, don't want to follow them either, because I realize I'm never going to be a seller. I'm really not good at selling myself. I want to sell books, you know, but I think that I would rather be a Krista. And I don't know, I'm never going to be a star the way Krista is a star, you know, but I'd rather seek community, right? I'd rather be a sharer. And I think by nature, I am a sharer. And I'm not a seller and I'm not a star. So, but that's interesting to me. So as I start sort of trying to find followers, if someone has 20,000 followers and they're following like 200 people, I don't follow them unless I really love their work. Obviously, if I want to see what they're making, I will follow them. But just to be on board, nah, you know, so the people who interest me are people who are making quilts that I really like. And kind of have an even number of followers and people they're following. That seems to me good. Or are following a lot of people, but only have 50 followers. I'm like, I'll follow you. I'll be your follower. And so anyway, but it's just two different things. And, you know, one of the things we have talked about on Twilters recently is the new Fonz and Fonz podcast, Quilt Your Heart Out, which I initially was a big fan of and would like to be a big fan of, but the sound quality is so bad that I'm having a hard time with it. And I listened to an episode recently, like their most, I think episode 10, and the sound quality had actually gotten worse. And I don't know what's going on, but it bugs me. Just because I feel like they may be new to this, and there's definitely a learning curve. And I think the way they're doing the podcast is hard because they are podcasting remotely from one another. And then they're bringing a third person into the conversation via phone calls from people who have questions or else, you know, they do interviews with industry stars, right? So they've set themselves up a difficult task. And There are many awkward silences followed by rushes of everybody talking over each other. And I think it's because they can't see each other. So there are no visual cues that we give each other in conversations. They can't do that. And I assume they'll work that out. And that's not really my problem. It's really difficult to listen to. And I think I want to be really careful here. I like both Fonz girls very much. And I know that some people can have a difficult time with Mary. I like Mary Fonz. I think she's really talented. And, you know, she's a really good writer. She's a good speaker. I'm looking forward to her lecture at QuiltCon in Savannah. I'm pretty sure she's going to be there. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to be there. And I'd love to hear her talk. It's easy for someone like Mary Fonz to rub people the wrong way. She does have a big personality. She's very bright, and I think she sees herself as a teacher, and I think she is a teacher, and I think the people she teaches are new quilters, whom she, at this point, has many more skills than, but not long ago, she herself was a new quilter, and she talks a lot about that. And she's done an excellent job, I think, of trying to make quilting accessible to people who don't know how to sew, who didn't take home ec. So I think she's done a great job. When you listen to Quilt Your Heart Out, it starts out with Mary saying, "Hey, Mom, quilters need our help." And I think there's a way in which that's a little bit tone deaf, because a lot of us could use Mary Ann Fonz's help. In my experience as a podcaster, the people who listen to my podcast are really experienced quilters, certainly much more experienced than I am. And I have years worth of good advice from people who've listened to this podcast. It's been amazing. It's been a real education for me. People have steered me in the right direction or said, here's how I do this, or check out this link. You might actually learn something. No one has ever said anything like that to me, like mean or judgy. In fact, everyone's been incredibly generous. So I think when Mary Fawn says quilters need our help, I think she's being funny and I think she wants to be helpful, but I think maybe she doesn't hear how that may sound to people who don't need her help. And that may be, I think, overall the problem with the podcast, other than the sound. I mean, Tone Deaf, I think, covers a lot of it. It covers the sound quality, but also I think, and someone said this on Twilters today in this discussion, I thought it was brilliant because it was a thought that I had just had myself, which is there are, as Daisy has pointed out, industry podcasts and sort of more homey podcasts. And this kind of takes us back to the seller. You know, are you selling something? Or are you sharing something? The homey podcast or homemade radio podcast, as I like to say, we're sharing something. You know, we are sharers. We're trying to create community. I'm doing this podcast and Pam's doing hers and the Sandys are doing theirs and on because we like talking about quilt making and no one else will listen to us but you guys. Yeah. And I think with the Quilt Your Heart Out, and this is what someone said and what I had just been thinking, it's halfway homey and halfway industry, and it's right now that balance, there's something that's not quite working. It's just not yet. And I hope they get it to where it is. And I'm rooting for them. But what I'm first of all, they have to fix the sound. But here's the thing. The homey aspect of it is really nice, but they're not going to join Twilters. You know, they're not going to be part of our community, although they would be more than welcome. Everybody is welcome. And I think that is kind of a little bit of the disconnect for me on the homey side. It's like they're not going to reach out to me and say, fellow podcaster Francis, hey, how nice to meet you. We're all in this together. We're not all in it together. So I think that's why it feels a little not right to me. But I do want it to work. I do want them to get their sound better. I do want to see Mary Fawn speak at QuiltCon. And I do want even more to see my quilting friends there, my podcast, people I've met through the podcast, people who I haven't met yet, but who listen to the podcast, people, you know, I've made so many friends. This podcast has brought a lot into my life, not just good advice, but really good people through comments and emails and people on their way through town, you know, saying, let's get together, let's have some coffee. That to me, that's where the, you know, that's where the joy is. That's where the goodness is. So anyway, I'm not sure if I've come full circle the way that I hope to with this. Maybe I have, maybe I haven't, but just some thoughts buzzing around my head on a Sunday afternoon, and I will have more buzzy thoughts for you later. So I'll talk to you soon. We're going to take a little pause for an editorial note. I just listened to Quilt Diary Day 2. First of all, I spent a lot of time telling you the whole saga of the crib quilt, which I also did in Quilt Diary Day 1. You know, I've been sick. That's my only excuse. I'm just like, good Lord, woman. Hopefully, you know, at this, so perhaps as you begin Quilt Diary Day 2, if you have some vacuuming to do or need to wash the dishes, this would be a good time. And just sort of let the sound of my voice be your background. The second thing is that I talk about a book called The Lost Child by Julie Myerson, which is a memoir. Myerson's son, when he was in his mid-teens, started having problems with drugs. And as I'm discussing it, I say something I believe to be true, that Jack, who is 17, does not have a problem with drugs or alcohol. I'm fairly sure that is the case. But then I kind of go on to be really rambly and not coherent. Now, I know you are a kind and generous listener, and you would kind of untangle all my verbiage to understand what I was saying, but I feel like I would like to go ahead and untangle when I was talking about addiction, and to the extent if we have kids who
who are not having problems with drugs and alcohol. Some of that may be due to our diligent parenting, but I think some of it is due to the kid, you know, and I feel that with Jack. I mean, we certainly talked to him about drugs and alcohol and suggested he not mess about with them, and done stuff at school as well. But I think that he is, in many senses, a very sober person. So, but at some point, I just blather on about how it's all about good fortune, but it makes me sound like I'm saying that addiction is fortunate, and what I'm saying is that there is an extent if our children don't have those sort of problems. Some of it is really luck, you know, some of it is genetics, some of it is just who they are, some of it's just dumb good luck. So that's what I was trying to say, but you know me, I ramble, and it was early. Quilt Diary 2, Day 2, I started at 8 in the morning. I'd been up since 6:30, so really you could discount almost everything I say. I just wanted to share that with you. And since I've got you here, I just want to say thanks to Dorothy. I just, as I was editing, her comments on the last episode came in, which I really appreciated and wish that I'd had a chance to include them in my end of Quilt Diary Day 2 when I thank everyone for commenting. So I just was glad to have this opportunity here to say thanks to Dorothy. Thanks to you for listening to me in spite of the fact that sometimes I don't make any sense at all. Okay, on with the Quilt Diaries. Quilt Diary Day 2.
Hi. Quilt Diary Day 2. It's Saturday, April 30th. April, the month that got away. Goodness me. It went by fast. It's very early, just about 8 in the morning. I woke up at 6:30, and I decided to get out of bed. In part, sometimes if I lie in bed too long, even on a Saturday morning, I get a headache. I think it's because I clench my teeth. So I just sometimes it's just better to pop up and figure I'll take a nap later. Oh my goodness, we've got all kinds of noises, including a plane going overhead. Lots of birds. I'm on the porch. It's a little cold. It is a little rainy, a little overcast. I have a quilt on me, my Irish chain quilt, the red and white Irish chain. I've got my pup with me, Travis. And no one's up, so I thought, good time to podcast. Let's see, where am I? I am so many places. This week was a little bit weird because I was sick. It's just a bug, and it was kind of bug that wiped me out. It got Will, too, although everyone in my family is much more stoic about being sick, whereas I was sick all week. Will was sick 2 days, and again, it's just sort of knocked out, no energy, a little, not a lot of appetite. So it wasn't a productive week, except in terms of reading. I finished the new Jane Hamilton novel. Do you know her? A Map of the World. It may have won the Pulitzer or National Book Award. It's a really good book. Now, that came out a long time ago because I remember where I read it. Do you do that where, like, when someone says a book, you're like, oh, yes, I remember the couch I sat on to read that. And for me, that was in East Tennessee. So that was quite a while ago when I read A Map of the World. This is called The Excellent Lombards. I want to say Lombards and not Lombardi. I've got it right here. The Excellent Lombards. It just came out, and I really liked it. The ending I would quibble about. I feel like she kind of let the reins go slack the last 10% of the book. Up to that point, I was just into it. It takes place kind of in the 90s. The narrator is a I think the narrator is an adult, but she's looking back at herself mostly as a child. So the first section of the book is when she's fairly young, like 7 or 8, and then 9 and 10. So that's the first section. And then the second section, she's 12, and the last section, she's like 16, 17. And her name is Mary Frances. She goes by, some people call her Francie, like Francina Tree goes in Brooklyn, although that's not referenced in the book. And her brother, William, who's a year older, calls her Frankie. And the family lives on an apple farm in Wisconsin, and Jane Hamilton actually lives on an apple farm in Wisconsin. The farm is owned by Mary Frances' father, her uncle, and then a small share is owned by Aunt Mayhill, who may be a cousin, an older cousin. And in the early years in particular, you see this mythology that Mary Frances creates about the farm and her idea that she and her brother William, with whom she's very close, they will always live on the farm. And in fact, when she's very young, she thinks they'll get married. As she gets older, she realizes they won't get married, but still, will live on the farm. And she sees any relative who comes into town as kind of a threat to her future reign. It's not a plot-heavy novel. It's, you know, similar to Miller's Valley by Anna Quinlan. But it's a family novel. It's obviously I write books for children, about children. I'm always interested in books about children written from an adult perspective. And that's actually one of the things when you write books for children, that you actually have to step out of your adult perspective and get into your 11-year-old head, which I do with great ease, almost frightening ease. But I enjoy books about childhood written from the vantage point of of adulthood. So I really liked it. Again, last 10%, I was like, I don't know. But it would not keep me from recommending the book to you if you like family sagas, which I do very much. Another book I read, I guess I'm in my book report section, even though there's so much quilting stuff to tell you about, but let me tell you about because I was sick, I read. In fact, I'm almost done with the book called Mothering Sunday. The author's Graham Swift. He's British. It's a very short, it's a novella. And if you're a Downton Abbey fan, you might like it. It's not soapy as Downton Abbey, but it's a book that takes place over the course of one day, although there are many, the main character is named Jane Fairchild. She is during the events of the story, I believe is 24. She's a housemate at a once, maybe not great estate, but a once fairly established estate. This is right after World War I, where she works. The two sons of the estate were killed in World War I. And she has been having, since she was 16, an affair with the heir of the next door neighbor estate named Paul. And during the course of this book, on the day it takes place, it's Mothering Sunday, and she has been given the afternoon off. Everyone has gone from her house. Everyone has gone from Paul's house, and so they have a meeting. So it's such a short book that I can't tell you much about it without spoiling it. I will tell you that there are flashes to Jane's later life, and she actually becomes a very successful novelist. And so there are times the perspective of this story is from 80-year-old and 90-year-old Jane looking back upon that Mothering Sunday. I'm about 10 pages from being done. I actually read a good bit of it this morning, and then I don't know if you ever have that where you get up early and you read. And even if the book is good, and this is a good book, you start getting sleepy again. So I had to put it down because I wanted to actually be present for the last 10 pages. So that's good. And I read a book, a memoir called The Lost Child, also by a British writer named Julie Myerson. I had read a book review of a new novel she has out, which I put on hold and, in fact, is at the library waiting for me right now. I can't remember what that book was called. But this book is called The Lost Child. When I went onto the library website, I saw that she had other books, and this looked interesting. Essentially, the book was written, it was published in 2009. When she was writing the book, her oldest son, she has three children, was 17, and had developed a pretty serious drug problem. And so it's part of the narrative is about that, about, you know, and he had been, you know, a wonderful little boy and very, very bright, and you know, something in him changed in early adolescence, and he started taking drugs. And at first the parent, Meyerson, and her husband, I think her husband may just be her partner, were, kind of cool about it. Like, they found a joint in his room and didn't say anything, kind of like, well, useful experimentation. and he ended up to develop a very serious problem. And so part of the story is about that, and about when the book opens, they're kicking him out of the house, which was very difficult, and they let him back in and kicked him out again and let him back in. So there's that part of the story which is quite compelling. And as a parent, and I am a parent of a just turned 17-year-old. Jack's birthday was Wednesday. I do not believe he has drug problems whatsoever. But, you know, if that's true, then it's just, you know, it's many different things go into addiction. And some of it is good fortune, you know. So I'm not sure it's my masterful parenting. I think it's a lot of... a lot of factors. But, and so knowing that, I also know that kids can take a wrong turn very quickly. So, but it's hard, as a parent, reading these birds are so loud. If you can hear it, well, that bird, it's like in a tree across the yard, so loud. Anyway, it felt important to me to read that part of the narrative without being judgy, although part of me was a little bit judgy. I feel that as a parent I would have made different decisions than Meyerson, but I also know as a parent that you don't know what you'll do until you're in a particular situation. So but there were some things I was like, really? That's what you're doing? But then I mentally slapped myself to stop being judgy. The other part of the narrative, which I think ultimately was less successful. Meyerson was doing research for a book. She was visiting an antiques bookseller who showed her this kind of scrapbook made by a girl who lived in the same area in the early 1800s. And Meyerson starts investigating, who is this girl? The scrapbook is actually a collection of drawings and stories, and it's, you know, fascinating, and it was in very good condition. She doesn't buy it, it's much too expensive. Excuse me, but she looks at it and starts doing research on this young woman whose name was Mary. And it turns out that Mary died very young. I think she was 20 or 23. And at first, Meyerson's explorations of Mary's life and the house where Mary lived, which no longer stands, is quite interesting. The thing is, though, is that Meyerson continues to sort of follow the family tree out, and that becomes confusing because it's different family names, it's different surnames. I had to keep kind of going, checking back. Now, how is this person related to Mary? So, initially I was like, oh, this is really fascinating, really cool, and thinking about as an army brat, you know, I've lived so many places, it's like, I can't imagine there's no one place I think you could go to learn my family history in the way that Meyerson actually finds all these direct descendants of Mary, and they still have her stuff. Meyerson reads and I think in letters that Mary's mother wrote about a small purse. And when she goes to visit some of the descendants, someone actually has that purse that she's read about. So, you know, England is it's a small island. I don't know to what extent people are mobile the way they are in the U.S., but it just is fascinating that, you know, that you could just start going around the area where someone lived in 1823. And find people like, oh yeah, we've got her chair. So that I found interesting. It kind of, by the end, I was much more interested in the present day contemporary narrative. So I'm not sure. Here's where I would recommend it. If you as a parent have had to deal with these issues with your teenagers or have friends who have, you know, I think that there's great therapy in reading books where people talk honestly about their lives as parents, because we all make mistakes, and there is, you know, again, there I think there's a bit of luck factor then that should keep us from judging other parents' mistakes. And I have a really close friend of mine who has dealt with some of this with her son. And I know that one of the things that for her that's been really hard is that, you know, she's felt alone. I mean, she has her husband, and I think they've handled it really, really well. I think they've been very wise in how they have dealt with their son's difficulties. And I feel strongly that he will come through. He's a good kid. He's a very smart kid, and he's going to figure things out. And with their help, I think he's already kind of on the road to recovery. But I know this friend of mine is a bit more conservative than I am, and goes to a fairly conservative church, and people have dropped her, you know, because they just they it's, you know, she has their her family has kind of stepped out of that mainstream, everything's great, everything's perfect, let's show all our pictures on Facebook. You know, they've stepped out of that narrative, they stepped out off that road, and suddenly it's like, so what do you do? You know, is it contagious? Right? And so I think that's been so hard for her, and I could see where a book like this will make her maybe feel less alone. I think that for the right audience, this would be a good book. But it might not be for everyone. So that's my book report for you right now. So it's been a good reading time. I think there are a lot of good books coming out, so it's exciting. All right, so quilting, since this is a professional quilting podcast, as we all know, I am in the middle of about 5,000 projects, which is a little bit unusual for me. I'm usually sort of a one thing at a time girl. But okay, so last episode I told you about the quilt I was working on for Jack's advisor, Lacey, who's having a baby this summer. It's a quilt that needs to be all ready and done by May 18th. And Lacey's nursery colors, gray, fuchsia, coral, light yellow. I went to Thimble Pleasures, picked out a lot of fabrics for a string quilt, although if you listen to the last episode, you know that I was not calling it a string quilt, although as soon as, I believe it was Noni, left the first comments that she looked at the picture that I was using as a guide, and she said, oh, that's a string quilt. And I'm like, as soon as she said that, I'm like, of course it's a string quilt. Of course it is, you know, but you can put the obvious right in front of my face and I will miss it. Sometimes, you know, I can't see the forest for the trees. Sometimes I can't see the trees for the forest, but I miss all kinds of stuff. And as soon as Noni said that, I'm like, well, and I also realized, I'm so embarrassed to admit this, but maybe it will make you feel, maybe it'll make you feel very bright. Like, oh, okay, well, at least I'm smarter than that. But you're too kind to have thoughts like that, I know. But, you know, string quilts are paper pieced. So what I was doing was just sewing strips of fabric together and then using a ruler to sort of cut out essentially diamonds, you know, essentially to cut out the squares on point, right, which wastes a ton of fabric. But as soon as Noni said string quilt, I'm like, yeah, which you paper piece so that you don't waste tons of fabric. So after that, I was like, why don't I try to finish this up by paper piecing my blocks? What about that? I'm like, cool. And what was great, too, is I actually looked up string quilt, and there was a great Jenny Doan video. I should link to it. I'll try to remember to do that. In which it was good because I have paper pieced before, but, you know, she just was doing a demonstration. I was like, oh, okay. And it all came back to me. And so I did the last, probably, I don't know how many, let's say 20 blocks paper piecing, which, by the way, takes no time at all compared to the way I was doing it. The only problem was is it just wasn't the right quilt. I realized that while I was in process, that one, where I was reading, and maybe I may have talked about, I'm sorry, I'm thinking, did I talk about this in the last one? Yes, where I was reading, where I wanted it to read fuchsia, it was really, the colorway is reading strawberry. So, I'm starting over,
I ordered more solids from Fat Quarter Shop. I can't tell you how I feel like I've done 4 Fat Quarter Shop orders in the last week and a half. And they arrived yesterday, including a yellow. Yeah, it's a lot. I actually ordered 2 yellows. One is it's a really pretty yellow. It's got a touch of red in it as opposed to a touch of blue. And then I ordered a light buttery yellow that's actually quite beautiful. So I've got all those, and I have a true fuchsia. True fuchsia. These are all American brand cottons, which I love and recommend. Yeah, so I think it's going to be pretty. Other part of me is like, do I really want to do another string quilt? Maybe, maybe not. But it's a nice rainy Saturday. I have nothing scheduled. I may go to Whole Foods at some point to buy a better quality of fruit. But, you know, that's about it. Now, one thing is Jack has his AP calculus exam next week, so he's got friends coming over, so I'm going to have to study, and I think they're going to be using my sewing space, and I can't really put my foot down and say, no, you may not study for your AP calculus exam on this big dining room table. No, you can't. I don't know what I'm going to do. So at some point, I don't know that I will have the entire day at my disposal to work on quilts, at least not ones that require a sewing machine. Will I do a string quilt? Yeah, because one of the... I don't know. I'm a little tempted to look for something else. But if I do another string quilt, which I probably will end up doing, the first quilt I decided to do no sashing and just make it a wonky, after some discussion with the twilters, just wonky quilt. And in fact, last night I went ahead and I started piecing together the top, and I think it'll probably take half an hour more and I'll be done with the top, at which point I will fold it and put it away because I have so much else to do. But one of the things I'm excited about with this wonky quilt is that I have a space. When you walk down the stairs, you come down to the bottom of the stairs and you're just facing a blank wall. And I've never known, I need to put something there. It's just this blank wall. And it's gray, a real pretty gray that the man painted it many years ago. And this quilt, because it has a lot of grays, it has these strawberry reds, it will be perfect for that. So I may even put a sleeve on it. Who knows? But so I know where I'm going to put it, so I'm going to hang it, and I'm happy for it, but it's going to have to wait a little bit to be quilted because I do need to finish Lacey's crib quilt for the baby by May 18th, and that includes working out some sort of piecing for the back for the kids to sign with the with the same fabrics I had ended up with strips left over of strip, let's say vertical strips of horizontal stripes, probably 6 inches, 7 inches wide. And some of those stripes are white. And so my initial thought was I will get the kids to, I'll just send these in with Jack and the kids can sign the white stripes. Now I'll have to figure out a different system since I'm going to be making a different quilt, but I could see doing something similar for the back, and hopefully I'll figure that out very quickly so I can send Jack in with a good marking pen, fabric marking pen, and the strip, whatever that's going to be signed, send those in for the kids to sign them. I hope that all just made sense. I have no idea whether it did. All right, so we've got wonky crib quilt that I'm going to keep and put on my wall. That's the top is almost pieced, and that gets put to the side. The real crib quilt, the one that's going to be the gift, I hope to start on today. If I decide to go ahead and do string quilt, I will stick closer to the Denise Schmidt quilt, which was the original inspiration for this quilt, and that has sashing. Because, you know, it's funny, so I posted this online, I posted the blocks online and the twilters on Facebook and said, you know, sashing or no sashing, and it was very People would look at one picture, like the nose slashing picture, and go, oh, I like this, it's so wonky. And then they would get to the picture where there was sort of fake slashing, by which means it was the blocks were on the wall and I had strips of fabric so you could kind of see what that would look like. And then they're like, oh, I like the slashing too. So it was very like, no. Only a couple people were very firm. Yes, this should have sashing, or no, it should not have sashing. I think, so this one I actually would like to do with sashing. It won't be the exact same quilt. It will be different fabrics. It will still be a string quilt, but it will be have sashing, and it'll be an interesting exercise in some visual interpretation of a pattern. I don't know. It'll be something. But I need to get on that. That needs to be done. And then I want to get back to my modern birds in the air. And I'm really excited, and now I have all the fabric because I continue to sort of just have my fat quarter shop shopping cart open constantly, and I'm constantly filling it, and I hope they love me there. I love them. So that's where I am quilty-wise. That's where I am. Now, let me take this opportunity to thank everyone who commented on my last episode. Ah, but this reminds me, because Lazy Daisy commented on the last episode, and she had something very important to say, which is there's actually a webpage, How to Cut Setting Triangles, that shows you how to cut setting triangles. Last episode, I talked about the modern birds in the air quilt and setting the main unit on point, which meant that I needed to square it. And that meant that I needed to figure out how to measure the triangles to make the square, to make the diagonal unit a square unit. And the way I'm talking about it now just shows you my level of skills, perception, understanding, and general doofiness. What I was talking about, turns out, thank you, Daisy, setting triangles. Setting triangles for an on-point layout. That was what I was trying to get at. Setting triangles, according to Generations Quilt Patterns, helping you every stitch of the way. Setting triangles are the triangles used to fill in the spaces on the outside edges of a quilt that is set on point. While they might look the same, setting and corner triangles are very different. So there's this page that teaches you how to calculate and cut setting and corner triangles. It also has a chart, yes, at the bottom of the page that actually just says, if you have a finished, it just tells you, here's the measurements. If you have a finished block size of this, cut this. If you have corner triangles, cut this. If you have side triangles. So very helpful. So very helpful. I like to feel that I learned something by doing it the weird backwards way that I did it. But this, I have, of course, bookmarked this, printed it out, and tattooed it on my left thigh, so I will never have to do that again. I should take a picture of the graph paperwork that I did. It's actually really darling. I'm so cute. All right, so anyway, thank you so much, Daisy, for that. That was incredibly helpful. Thank you for saving me from myself, something that needs to happen nearly all the time. All right, and I want to thank everyone else who commented on episode 188, the Anywho episode. Okay, thanks to Noni, who pointed out that my string quilt has been around forever and Denise Schmidt may not claim it. I don't think she was trying to claim it. I was just making her claim it. Thanks to Vicky, who, like me, loves the look of pieced blocks. Thanks to Jane, who commented mid-podcast. You know, you can do that. In fact, you don't even have to listen. Just leave me a comment. I love hearing from you. But Jane wanted to tell me that her new favorite thread for free motion quilting is a poly thread called Glide. She says, I've used it on a couple of quilts, and it's like the magic wand of quilting. I use it for top and bobbin, as it's near impossible for me to get the tension right if I mix thread types. So, thank you, Jane, for that. I will look that, see if I can find some Glide. Daisy, also mentioned something I heard before. Superior Threads has a poly thread, and it's, what is it called? Bottom side, something like that. Something very randy and risque. So apparently, other people have figured this out long before me, which is just not unusual. Anyway, thanks, Jane. I will look that up because that would be nice not to have to deal with these tensions issues. Thanks to the lovely Katie from Quilting Daydreams. And she's having gentle fun with me after the last episode, in which I talk about sewing strips together and who I needed to credit for that. And she says, I think sewing strips of fabric together has been happening since quilting began. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess so. No copyright needed. Thanks to Gretchen from 120blocks.com, a wonderful blog. I have the link in on my blog. You should go and give it a read. And she loves my my eye slipped down. Katie loves my eyeball idea. My feeling that if you can eyeball a quilt and figure out how to make it, you don't have to worry about copyright violation. Thanks to Gretchen, who had not listened yet, but had just looked at my pictures and liked the VFW star quilt. Thank you. And the modern birds in the air, which she says, no offense, kind of looks like geese in the air. I guess it does. But that's okay, because geese are birds, so it all works out. I heard from Krista, but that was on the interview with novelist Marie Bostwick. Thank you, Krista. She also commented on last week's episode, which I so appreciate. That's the wonderful Krista Watson. You can go find out all sorts of things about machine quilting at KristaQuilts.com and also get her wonderful new book with Angela Walters. Yay! Let's see. Oh, got another comment from Vicky, and I should, if I think about it, I will put, she linked to John Adams, Quilt Dad, has a book called Beyond Neutral, Inspired Nature's, let me look this up, sorry. Okay, Beyond Neutral, Quilts Inspired by Nature's Elements by John Q. Adams, and if you look at the cover, it's not my birds in the air, but Vicky saw this and thought of me because it is definitely sort of a modern birds look to it. So thank you, Vicky, for just thinking about me. I think that's really nice. But also, it looks like a good book. Heard from Claire, who loves my use of the word muggles. Heard from Debbie, my buddy Debbie. So anyone who comes to see me, like my BFF, who's glad to hear that I got the hard binding figured out. By the way, a friend of mine, after listening to the podcast, sent me the Fonz and Porter binding tool, which she, I think, expects me to learn how to use. I'm going to try. I think, and what she said is once you get the hang of it, then it just makes it easy. You know, it's like riding a bike, and I hope that is true. Although I actually had a difficult time riding a bike. I'm really just not that bright. Let's see. Oh, yes. She's also had the problem with the white batting pulling through navy fabric, and she used navy blue Sharpie to take care of that. Very wise, very wise. Her from Brenda F. And, oh, you know what? I just mixed up. No. So Debbie, she used the navy blue Sharpie. Brenda F. learned how to do the hard binding, and she learned how to do it on napkins. Heard from, from Quilt and Jenny, who almost had a fit when I did not mention the fact that I will be in Atlanta to debut Birds in the Air at her guild's big show. This is the Chattahoochee Evening Stars. Big show in September. I think it's September 24th. I'll be talking more about it as we get closer. Anyway, I had told Quilt and Jenny I was going to announce that and then almost forgot. And once again, almost gave Quilt and Jenny a fit. Got great comments from Jay, but I was talking about, you know, the whole process of, you know, we have to use fabric to make quilts, and fabric is expensive, and so sometimes it feels like, oh, I can't have practice sessions. I can't mess up, right? Because that's $12 a yard worth of mess up. And Jay says, I know that fabric costs $12 or so, $12 or so a yard, but it's important to make designs over and over until one is satisfied because of growth as a quilt maker. Even if I'm not satisfied with my first iteration, it generally is not an ugly quilt and someone likes it, including me. Yes. And then she says, but in terms of being an artist in the loosest sense, however, I need to make the same design again in order to satisfy the design desire I have in my heart. And then she gives a link to look at iterations of various designs on her series page. So that is in the comments. If I remember, I actually will put it in the show notes because that's sort of interesting to look at. And I do like the idea. I mean, yeah, even the rough draft of the quilt, you will have uses for, right? In the same way that the quilt that's going to hang in my hallway now that I thought might be the crib quilt is really just kind of a first draft for the quilt that I will do for Lacey, and I will use that quilt. Heard from Sandy over Quilting for the Rest of Us, and this was on an earlier episode, 185, where I talked about the Quilters Academy books, and she said that she bought the books, or at least some significant portion of the series, with the thought, here I'll quote, with the thought that I was going to finally learn how to do this for real after about 12 years of quilting. However, I quickly tired of the quote-unquote quilt police feel to the book. Yes, I believe that we all do ourselves a lot of favors when we learn how to do things accurately, so it's worth really working on that, hence me buying the books in the first place. I've created a lot of problems for myself in the past when I've approached things with less concern for accuracy. But I think the tone of voice in several places in the book is pretty off-putting and skews toward judgmental. I agree. Just from having the first one, she's a little scary. So, and you know, there's a tension there, right? For me, as someone who kind of felt like the door to quilting was opened for me by Gwen Marston with Liberated Quilt Making. We're like, oh, I don't have to worry so much about getting everything perfect. I don't have to worry about these fractions. I can just sew things together and see if I like them. And so there's that, which is a beautiful thing. And yes, but that desire to sew more accurately, because, and part of what Sandy says, is like, when you don't, it creates problems. But it's finding the right teacher. And partly it's a little bit of a piecemeal approach too, at least the way that I learn is like, I tend to just learn as I go. So that may be why the Quilt Academy books aren't for me, along with Harriet making me feel sort of bad about myself, which, they, you know, there's so much in the culture to already make me feel bad about myself. I don't need that in my quilt life too much. And I guess, so Sandy was catching up on my podcast, so I got some great comments from her. Heard from Stephanie from blessedtoquilt.com. One day we are going to get together. We're both North Carolinians. And I hope that I will be seeing a lot of you at QuiltCon. Those East Coast types. You East Coast types. Let's all meet up in Savannah in 2017. And I heard from the lovely Krista Watson. Her personal thread of choice for both piecing and quilting is Orafil 50 weight cotton, which definitely for me for piecing. And now I know that if I want to use it for quilting, I need to use it top and bottom. Thank you, everyone, for taking the time to get in touch. I did get some nice emails, and I started writing back, and then I got sick. That is my excuse, and it is a true excuse. But let me say thanks to... to Ruth, to Michelle, and to Nancy for their... I got three emails on Sunday. It was so nice. So thank you for taking the time to write. I love hearing from you. If you want to get in touch with me, the contact information is coming up here in my outro, my professional outro, because I am a professional podcaster, and I hope you do appreciate that. All right, thank you so much for listening. I will see you next time. I hope you have a good week, a good weekend. Whenever you listen to this, I hope you're having a fabulous and very quilty day. All right, then.
Thanks for listening to the Off Kilter Quilt. Come visit me online at offkilterquilt.com. Until next time, this is Frances. Remember, life is short. Quilt first.